and the impact of dark matter on life is professor and chair in computational astronomy at Stellenbosch University, Professor Yinji Ma. Professor Ma, good evening, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you indeed. Yeah, thank you for the invitation.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Professor, you mentioned that the Big Bang Theory is central to your research. Why do you say so?
Well, because that's actually the origin of all mysteries. So we always want to ask a question, where do we come from? And, you know, where is our history and where everything, you know, come from and start to evolve and so on. So if you trace back, you know, to the beginning of the human being, of course, you will collect the fossils and so on, you know, having the story of sapiens and so on. And if you trace back to the beginning of the Earth, then you start to investigate how does the Earth form, you know, in this stellar system, and how does the planet form, etc. But then all of these histories are short compared to the history of the universe. So if you trace back everything to the beginning, then it is really the Big Bang. So Big Bang is a mystery of everything at the beginning, and is the really, really the fundamental point to understand the entire universe as a whole.
Has that theory been tested or challenged in any way, Professor?
Yes, theory has been, tested, has been verified. So back to the whole idea comes from, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity and also several other theories. Things like Alexander Friedman's work and George Gamow's work in 1950s and so on. But by then, people didn't take this theory seriously. They think this is just some very exotic scenario, very strange theory that they probably put in on shell and didn't really take it seriously. So, in fact, the first evidence coming from the cosmic microwave background radiation from the two radio astronomers in Bell's lab in the U.S. in 1965. So from then, there's more and more evidence of the Big Bang. So by 1965, they measure the afterglow of the hot Big Bang, which is cosmic microwave background radiation that I cover in my lectures. And after that, because of the new modern technology, people start to collect more and more evidence, and all of the evidence seem to confirm this scenario. So far, we have a lot of different observation evidence that can really confirm the hot Big Bang and also its aftermath evolution.
Professor, what are neutrinos? I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. What are neutrinos? What's dark matter, dark energy? What are these elements?
So you asked three different things, three different things. Neutrino is this very weakly interactive, very light particles in the universe, and they were not anywhere in the standard model of particle physics. I mean, in the standard model, they would be all massless, but we know that neutrino has have mass, you know, from the super Kamikaze experiment in Japan and so on. So therefore, we really don't know the nature of neutrino that much. And neutrino also conserve the weak interaction at the particle level. So that's, it's a very mysterious particle that in the universe. And because it's very weak interaction, it doesn't really sound an alarm or, you know, register at your telescope if you try to measure it. So therefore, it's kind of a mysterious particle that we haven't yet understand its physical nature. And dark matter is even more mysterious. At least neutrino, we register some of the events at a super Kamikaze, this huge pan of water, that be able to detect these neutrinos. But however, for dark matter, we don't know its nature at all. There's no evidence whatsoever what particle nature of dark matter is. All we know is its gravitational nature. All we know is that dark matter itself attract each other and also attract the visible matter like the baryons and atoms and so on, so that it can help the galaxy to form. So that's what we know about dark matter, but we don't know the particle nature. If you ask me what particle of dark matter is, I don't know. And in fact, searching for dark matter is one of the frontier research that we're doing currently. And the last thing is about dark energy. Dark energy is an even more mysterious things, even more mysterious substance that we don't know its nature at all. So what we know is that Einstein wrote down his Einstein field equation in 1916, and initially he thought the universe was static. And then later on, Edwin Hubble showed him that universe is actually expanding. So Einstein said, okay, to make that happen, initially he would involve that lambda, just a mathematical term in the equation to make that term balance the gravity. But later on, Einstein said, okay, if the universe is expanding, then we don't need that term, and he gave that up. So basically that was what it is. But in terms of the nature of dark energy, we don't know at all. So what you ask me, neutrino, dark matter, and dark energy, the level of mystery, the level of this unknown property is just progressively become higher and higher. Neutrino, we have already measured it in some way, but still we don't know the physical nature very well. Dark matter, we know it has gravity, but we don't know the particle nature. And dark energy is even something even more mysterious. It's just a mathematical term that appear in the equation and seem to drive the universe accelerated expansion.
Professor Yinji Ma joining us in conversation this evening on The Honest Truth, helping us unravel the mysteries of the universe. He's professor and chair in computational astronomy in Stellenbosch Understanding. Given the work in trying to improve understanding of aspects such as dark matter and dark energy that you spoke of, Professor, what makes these elements so crucial, do you think, to understanding the universe?
Because they are, the dark matter consists of 26% of the universe budget, and dark energy consists of almost 70%. Mm. The most recent experiment shows it's about 68%. They are a big portion of the universe budget, and all the visible matters like atoms and so on, they are, all together is less than 5%.
Wow.
So because they are so abundant that they it's very necessary to understand their action, their function in the universe evolution. Obviously our atom, our visible matters, is really something, a small minority, although it's very important to us.
Mm. Your work often involves innovative observational methods. Professor, are you able to share an example of how these methods have helped unravel a significant mystery of our universe?
Yes. So I think the all of our work of using radio telescope or using optical telescope to observe universe is trying to get data from the sky and then analyze the data and to fit the model and to see whether the model really can fit the data or not, or maybe the data is work against the model. So, you know, we better abandon that or to search for something new explanation. So just giving you an example, one of my earlier work is trying to fit the CMB power spectrum. So we get the data from the ESA's Planck satellite. You may heard about the European Space Agency's Planck satellite.
Yes.
We get the data from there, and we measure the power spectrum from Planck, which is really the Fourier transformation of the two-point correlation function. And then we can measure the data from that two-point correlation function, and then we fit the data with the lambda, we call lambda CDM, the Einstein's dark cosmological constant, that is the dark energy term, plus the cold dark matter, CDM, cold dark matter. And then with that model, and with some reasonable initial conditions, so on, we can fit the whole data with a theory. And we can even determine the parameter from this data and so on. So that just to give you an example that how the interplay between data and theory works. So if the theory doesn't really go through all the data points, if there's some region of that graph showing the theory deviates from the data very much, then we would be surprised whether to see whether the data may be wrong or a theory may be wrong and so on. Then we investigate the reason of it. Mm-hmm. So that's the interplay between data theory, which is really our work every day.
Fascinating. Yeah. Professor Yinji Ma from Stellenbosch University joining us this evening on Smile FM. 0829-904-904. Investing in astronomy is said to push the boundaries of what we know of our human knowledge. Professor, how do you see this investment potentially translating into practical benefits for everyday life?
Oh, this is a tough question. I have never heard about the I have never thought about how to materialize astronomy and to benefit. But I think at least it helps us to satisfy our curiosity. I mean, I believe everyone would have a curiosity of the universe, the space, and, you know, not just our Earth, happening on Earth, but everything that happening in the space and elsewhere, and this vast amount of region, you know, on the sky and so on. So I think all of us have that curiosity. I think at least astronomy help us to answer some of these questions and to satisfy our curiosity of the universe about, you know, and think deeply about our human with nature and so on. But for materialized purpose, I think, you know, we don't really do science for any practical application, especially in astronomy case. I think astronomy case is very purified, like pure science, like really like pushing the human's knowledge, boundary of human knowledge, and trying to step into those unexploited territories and finding new things, new phenomena, new laws of physics, and so on. But on the other hand, because of this extraordinary pursuit, we, on the way of making discovery, we always develop some tools that eventually become beneficial to human life or become you know, have some commercial use and therefore people can use in their daily life and so on. For instance, when astronomers passing out on the data and so on, they would having a faster cable lines and create better power station and also the database for transferring big data, and certainly that's it would be very useful for our daily use of internet and so on and so on. And things like this. And also there's a lot of, R&D innovation along some of these, very sensitive telescope. You know, that if you build a telescope that is very sensitive, then in principle, you can turn that telescope, around and use that as a radar to receive, you know, human, emitted signal and so on. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of practical use along the way of making discovery, but I think the initial purpose of astronomy is really pushing the boundary and finding those unknowns.
And yeah. Speaking about pushing the boundary and finding those unknowns, lastly, Professor, what are some of the observational explorations that are being planned for the next 5 to 10 years?
Oh, many, especially in South Africa. I think this is really, we are actually entering into the golden age of South African astronomy. Because we have this wonderful equipment called Meerkat telescope. You may heard about it.
Yes.
It's a 6-foot number of dishes in the northern cape of South Africa, and that is which will eventually merge into SKA. So we have that wonderful telescope, and also we have the HERA telescope, the Hydrogen Epoch Reionization Array, HERA. That is also in the Karoo Desert. So we have all of these very, very sensitive, wonderful telescope, which is very unique in probing the universe. So I think, you know, the next 5 to 10 years, it will be a golden age for South African astronomy. I believe there will be a lot of new discoveries along the line.
Professor Yinji Ma, Professor and Chair in Computational Astronomy at Stellenbosch University. Appreciate you joining us and for sharing some of the mysteries of the universe with us this evening, Professor. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Thank you. Smile.
Smile. FM. Do you remember that conversations on the honest truth are available for you on smilefm.co.za? Joining us this evening next on the honest truth to help us navigate the complexities, particularly when